40. I raise my hand, letting the pistol hang limp from my index finger. I'm not looking for trouble. "Reckon it found you, then," the man says. "More than once," I say, trying to lighten the mood. Cassie's voice slips out of the manhole. "What's going on up there?" "Seems we're not welcome in our own town," I tell her, looking down to find her already scaling the ladder. "Ain't your town, Synergy," the old man says. "I'm not with them," I tell him, starting to turn around. "Don't do it," the man says, and I think I recognize his voice now. Phil Hardy owns the only gas station and repair shop in town. Salty old man, but honest, even if he doesn't like you or who you work for.
"I ain't interested in hearing Mr. Hardy."
Cassie has poked her head above the snow line. Her voice is scolding.
"Put that down before you go and shoot the only chance you all have of surviving this mess."
Hardy is silent for a moment, but then says,
"You work for him too, Cass."
"You've been kind to me my whole life," Cassie says, "but I won't stand for—"
"You won't stand? Girl, have you seen what's become of our home? Are you aware of the kind of hell we've all been through? The people you both work for did this. Can you deny it?"
Cassie climbs out of the hole, standing beside me. Her gun is tucked into the small of her back, but I'm not sure she could shoot Hardy, even if he gives her a reason to. I'm not sure I could either. He's been a fixture in Black Creek since I was a kid. I turn around and find a hunting rifle leveled at my chest. Hardy is in the second floor window of the yellow brick courthouse. Despite his thick, camouflaged winter coat and red trapper hat, he's shivering. But I don't think it has anything to do with the cold or out of fear for his own life. Like Cassie, he doesn't want to shoot, but that doesn't mean he won't.
"Don't deny it," I say, "but we also didn't know about it, and we're doing what we can to stop it, to set things right." "You just crawled out of a hole in the ground, armed for a fight, and expect me to believe you're here to help us? I oughta. You ought to put that fool thing away."
My father has climbed to the surface behind Cassie and me. When he steps out around us, Hardy is confused and then dumbfounded.
"Willie?"
"Back from the dead," my father says with a smile. "Though from my perspective, that never happened." Hardy slides back inside the courthouse, slamming the window closed behind him. My father and I glance at each other. "That a good thing?" I ask. My father shrugs.
"Been a while since he's seen me, I reckon."
"You knew him well?"
"He was one of the Hell's Balls."
"Hell's Balls?"
"High school bowling league team. We thought it was a funny name."
"You bowled?" How did I never know that about my father?
"Before your mother and I," he smiles, "I was never any good."
The courthouse's front door opens as Hardy charges out, arms open, a smile on his face. The only thing he's armed with is open arms. He embraces my father, giving him a few manly pats before leaning back and saying,
"Lord, it is good to see you again. You've aged a mite better than me. You look about as young as you did last I saw you."
"For me, it's 1985, my father says.
"Not just you,"
Hardy says, his eyes darting around the town.
"We got folks from all over history. It was chaotic at first. Some ruffians from the 1800s stirred up trouble. A few people died in the ruckus, but things have calmed down since we made sense of all this."
"You made sense of this?" I asked, sounding more doubtful than intended.
"We had help," he says. "But before you meet him, I need to be sure you are all on the side of angels."
"Buddy," Kuznetsky says as he climbs from the manhole,
"we are the fucking angels." "You work for them, too," Hardy says, his anger returning. "And you ain't even a local. Is that supposed to be a bad thing? Because—"
I put a hand on Kuznetsky's shoulder. I don't think he realizes how fiercely loyal and how easily offended longtime residents of Black Creek can be when their home is insulted. Snow crunches behind us, and Hardy takes a step.
"Who all else do you have hidden away down there?"
As we separate and turn to face the newcomer, I'm half expecting to find Flores, rifle aimed at Hardy's head, ready to end the discussion with the threat of violence. Which would be a very bad thing. While I can't see anyone in the courthouse windows, I have no doubt we're being watched by more than a few folks with guns, and the know-how to put them to use. Instead, it's Owen, dragging himself up into the snow. My father reaches down and lifts him up, holding him.
"Mr. Hardy, you look old," Owen says.
Hardy smiles, looking back and forth between me and Owen. "I'm trying to keep my family alive,"
I say. Same as most people in town, I'd guess. Hardy gives a slow nod.
As hellish as this all's been, it's been a godsend for a few folks, yourself included, it would seem.
Is Cassie here? Owen asks, eyes darting around the ghost town. You know, my Cassie? Young Cassie?
Watch it, Cassie says, getting a smile out of my younger self. Reckon she's around here somewhere, he says, confirming her presence. Anyone else in that hole?
A man from the future, I say. A good man. And a Cherokee woman in need of a hot fire and something warm to drink. I could leave it at that, but I opt for full disclosure. Synergy has a number of folks held captive on top of Mount Adel, men and women from different ages. They're safe for now, but...
Ain't none of us safe, Hardy says. And don't you go thinking it for a second, or you're liable to wind up like some of the others in town.
You have no idea, I think, but I keep it to myself. Old Hardy is spooked enough as it is. If he knew there was an army of heavily armed drones, Ice Age predators, and what might very well be a Nephilim demigod stalking the mountain, he probably would have put a bullet in me the moment I stuck my head up out of the snow-laden street. He looks over at my father and Owen.
Ain't it something?
Then he puts his fingers to his lips and lets out a shrill whistle. Behind him, the courthouse doors open. A ragtag group of temporal survivors from various time periods steps out. While some still sport their ancient clothing, most are clad in modern winter gear and shoes, no doubt taken from the sporting goods store at the end of the street. A woman I don't recognize steps past Hardy, holding out a black winter jacket. Thank you, I say, slipping into the fleece-lined sleeves, zipping up and hugging myself. I turn at the sound of more opening doors, and I find people emerging from most of the buildings lining the streets, coming to take a look at the newcomers, perhaps looking for loved ones from their present or past.
Owen!
The voice is instantly recognizable, and it all but breaks my heart. Young Cassie breaks away from her mother's hand and sprints through the snow. Owen squirms out of my father's arms and meets her halfway. I'm caught off guard by the affection they share, wrapping their arms around each other. This is what I passed up on all those years, bitter at the world for taking my father, afraid to love anyone again. Adult Cassie and I share a smile, and I take her hand. I'm done missing out, done not risking my heart and the potential pain that vulnerability creates. When Owen and young Cassie separate, he whispers quickly and then points to me and adult Cassie. The girl's eyes go wide. When she spots our interlinked hands, she looks pleased. Then she approaches. Hey, adult Cassie says, looking down at her younger self. This is weird, right?
Totally,
the younger Cassie says. Adult Cassie crouches and reaches out, embracing her child form.
It's good to see you again.
The younger Cassie giggles.
My voice got deeper.
She pulls back, inspecting her adult body.
And I got boobs.
While the rest of us have a laugh, she turns to her mother, who's approaching more cautiously with a large number of people. I know some of them, but most are remnants of times past, including several Cherokee who have been accepted into the town. Hundreds of people fill the snow-clogged street. Black Creek is alive and well. Its population swelled. But how long can they survive? Probably until Tsul Kalu figures out they're here.
Mom!
Young Cassie waves her mother over and then points to her older self.
Look, it's me!
There's a moment of confusion as Mrs. Dearborn looks at her grown daughter. It fades when their eyes meet. Adult Cassie embraces her mother, calm and casual.
Hey, Mom.
Unlike me, Cassie would have seen her mother, maybe even this morning. Mrs. Dearborn, on the other hand, is shaken.
You're so old,
Cassie chuckles.
About the same age as you, old lady.
Then she looks around.
Dad here?
Mrs. Dearborn frowns.
He was out of town while we were shopping. It's just us.
I'm sorry, Cassie says, her face sinking with the realization that unlike my father, her father will not be resurrected. You'll never be without family, my father says, gently touching her arm. He and Mrs. Dearborn aren't close friends. That kind of thing wouldn't have been appropriate in their day. But our families attended events together and had the occasional game night at Cassie's and my insistence. I also believe she and my mother were good friends before I was born. Before any more reunions can take place, we need to move indoors, regroup, and then get on our way. While I want another flux to take us out of this frozen hell, we need to be prepared to stop the super collider when that happens.
Are you in charge?
I ask Hardy.
Thank the good Lord, no, Hardy says. Look out,
a voice says, emerging through the ring of people forming around us. Hardy points toward the voice.
That'd be him now.
I turn toward the slowly parting crowd.
Let me through. Come on, y'all, hurry up and...
The crowd separates, revealing Levi, dressed for winter, a shotgun over his shoulder. His jaw drops open when he sees me and adult Cassie. Then he looks to the sky, mouths,
Thank you, Jesus, and says, Father Abraham in a bathrobe, is it good to see y'all?